to the Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Micaela, your host. Welcome to episode 52. Today I'm going to be discussing chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Firebolt. Another really fun chapter today, as always. And again, sometimes like I'm recording these episodes back to back pretty close to each other, so there's not always a bunch of like new Wizarding World news or anything like that to discuss. So I can just get right into reminding you guys that my email is theheiressofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is the Heiress of Slytherin Podcast. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. And you can donate on the Anchor link or leave voice messages there. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. So I can just get right into a summary of last week's episode. So last week, it was the part two of chapter 10 of Prisoner of Azkaban, which is The Marauder's Map. And it was such a good chapter, and I had to split it up into two because there was just so much backstory with the Marauders. A reminder, that's Harry's dad, James Potter, that's Sirius Black, the one who everyone's scared of in this book, Remus Lupin, a Defense Against the Dark Arts teacher, and Peter Pettigrew, who is actually in his Animagus form as Scabbers. And it was just such a fun episode because the backstory was just insane. And I just had a lot of detailed explanation talking about it and everything because it's so cool. And it's just super fun to talk about. So even though last episode was just the second part of chapter 10, for my little summary here, I'm just going to give an overview of the whole chapter 10, not just the second half of the episode, just like as a little refresher. So basically, the big points are that Harry received the Marauder's Map from Fred and George. They stole it from Filch's office in their first year, right now their fifth years, and they no longer need the map. They give it to Harry so he can use it to monitor what's going on in the school, kind of. They wanted him to get into Hogsmeade. Remember, he didn't get his permission slip signed, so he couldn't go. But he was able to use the secret passage out of the castle with the map and able to see the location of where people are at and everything. So he was able to sneak into Hogsmeade, and he joined up with Ron and Hermione, and they went to a pub in Hogsmeade called the Three Broomsticks, and there they had butterbeer and everything. But remember, Harry wasn't supposed to be in Hogsmeade, right? He would have gotten in a lot of trouble, so would have Ron and Hermione. But when they were there, they had to hide because suddenly in walked Cornelius Fudge, Minister of Magic. Hagrid walked in, McGonagall walked in, Flitwick walked in, and they all sat at a table right next to where Ron, Harry, and Hermione were. So Hermione did some magic, moved the Christmas tree in front of their table, and Ron and Hermione, they shoved Harry underneath the table, and they heard the whole conversation that, like this whole story that Fudge, McGonagall, and Hagrid, and Flitwick, he added some input too, they were telling to Madame Rosmerta, who is the owner of the Three Broomsticks. And basically the information that they told her, and that I had to like explain a lot because there was just so much detail and stuff that went into it. But basically they told her, and this is how Harry found out, that Sirius Black was best friends with his dad, like inseparable like brothers. And Sirius Black is the one who betrayed his parents to Voldemort. He's the reason that they're dead. He learned that he was also the best man at his parents' wedding, and he's Harry's godfather. So it was just so much information, and basically they just had the wrong man. I mean, Harry doesn't learn that until the end of the book, but you know how I do on this podcast, how I explain things. But they learned that Sirius Black was this crazy betrayer of his friends and everything that betrayed Harry's parents to Voldemort, which is not the case. It was actually Peter Pettigrew, but they don't know that yet. And something else that we learned a little bit about is Fidelius Charm. That becomes important just throughout the series. It's used a few times, and we got an explanation of a little bit about how that spell works. And another detail that we learned is that Sirius Black, Fudge wants to say that he's mad and crazy, but before he escaped, like he visited him in Azkaban, not him necessarily, but he went to Azkaban and he interacted with Sirius Black. And he didn't seem mad. He was actually calm and normal and sane. And that kind of freaked Fudge out because he was a high security prisoner. And all the prisoners, most of them in there, they go crazy, especially when the Dementors are guarding them so heavily, especially a high security prisoner like Sirius Black. And Fudge mentioned how that was unnerving to him and how Sirius Black asked him if he could have his daily profit because he missed doing the crosswords in the profit. And that, how I explained from the first chapter, that is how Sirius Black saw that Peter Pettigrew, who was in his Animagus form as Ron's pet rat Scabbers, is still alive, and that's what gave him the motivation to escape. Now that we're up to speed on the last chapter, we can get into chapter 11 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, the Firebolt. So Harry, Ron, and Hermione, of course, they all just heard this information in the pub and the Three Broomsticks. And it was really harrowing for Harry. That was really jarring, really just upsetting news for him to hear about Sirius Black, the man who escaped Azkaban to supposedly come and kill Harry because Sirius is supposedly Voldemort's right-hand man, like his Death Eater, used to be best friends with his parents, with his dad. They were inseparable. He was best man at their wedding. He's his godfather. And he betrayed them like that, like he's the reason they're dead. Harry heard all this information, and it's hurtful. It's a lot to take in for Ron and Hermione too, but especially Harry. And he knows that he has to get back to the castle because he's not supposed to be in Hogsmeade, so he has to get back before everybody else does. And the chapter opens. Harry, he just like stumbles back to Honeydukes because that's where the secret entrance is. Like, he has to take the cellar back to the castle underneath that tunnel. And he stumbles back, and he really doesn't have a clear idea of how he even managed to get back to Honeydukes through the tunnel and back into the castle. Like, he's just in so much like shock and like pain that he just like went for it. He just like went back, and his mind was just completely racing. And the return trip, all he knows is that like when he left Hogwarts to go to Honeydukes, that it took like what seemed like forever, like an hour. And then on the way back, it took like what felt like no time at all, because all that information was just racing in his head. And I feel for Harry right now, like after hearing that crazy, sad information, like kind of like traumatic information. And then he has to just go back and like go to the castle and get on with his life, you know? But it's hard. That was really tough information. And his head is just pounding at that conversation he heard. Like, he barely even knows what he's doing. He is just so, like, traumatized right now. And he wonders why the adults didn't tell him. Like, Hagrid, he's friends with Hagrid. Hagrid never said anything to him about that. Dumbledore never told him. Mr. Weasley never told him. He even thinks Fudge. Fudge didn't even tell me, you know? So he's wondering, like, why didn't anybody ever mention the fact that my parents are dead because their best friend betrayed them? So this is rough for Harry. It is, I keep using like the words like jarring, traumatizing, harrowing, because that's what it is. It is really upsetting, and it's really hard news to hear. And I'm trying to stress the importance of that because it's interesting too, because this isn't the actual fact. Yes, their friend did betray them, but it wasn't Sirius Black. It wasn't his godfather. You know, this is a person that's going to become very important in his life pretty soon, in like later this school year, and he doesn't realize it. But right now, it's just like shock, and it's going to be hatred. It's going to turn into hatred and just rage. So Harry right now is really struggling. And it's also another example of how Dumbledore specifically does not tell Harry a lot. There's so many things that Dumbledore keeps from Harry. And a lot of it, Harry learns after Dumbledore is already dead. And he wonders a lot in the seventh book, like, why didn't he tell me this? There's so many things, like, every single year, there's always something that Dumbledore does not tell Harry. And he should have told him. And I kind of wonder if this was one of those things Dumbledore should have told Harry. Because there are some things in the later books where I'm like, okay, Dumbledore, you could have told Harry that, you should have. But I don't know if this is one of them. I'm wondering if Dumbledore suspected that Harry would kind of turn, he would change. For sure, this news is going to change anyone. But he would change in a way, like, that would make him lose himself, like the rage. Like, Harry gets very angry and he just seeks revenge on Sirius Black at some point in this book. So I kind of wonder if that is why Dumbledore kept that information from him. Dumbledore feels he is protecting Harry from a lot of things by not telling him certain information. Maybe he feels he's too young to know. He kind of feels like he's not ready for this information. And something that Cornelius Fudge said in the previous chapter was that Harry doesn't know this information. And he says that you can't even imagine like what this information would do to Harry. Of course he doesn't know. I wouldn't say that I 100% agree with Fudge with this statement, like that Harry shouldn't know. But I do agree that, like, imagine what this information would do to him, how he would feel. Like, that's why he doesn't know. I agree with that part. Like, they're protecting Harry in a way. And this is, like, another time in this book where he's like, why haven't they told me this? Do they think I can't handle it? Because the first thing was with Sirius Black escaping. Like, supposedly everyone thinks that he escaped to come after Harry. And Harry's like, why did no one tell me this before? Do they think I can't handle it? I'm not completely useless. I've defeated Voldemort a few times now, you know? So he is upset with that. And this is another example where adults are keeping information from him that he is still discovering and he's finding out on his own. And it is upsetting. It makes him mad, rightfully so. But also, I kind of agree that maybe this was something that they didn't want to tell him, because it's just so hurtful. And sometimes you got to hear hurtful things, but this is specifically a really, really hurtful and hard thing to hear. All throughout dinner that night, Ron and Hermione keep watching Harry nervously, because remember, the three of them all heard that information, and they know that their friend Harry is struggling right now after hearing all that info, but they can't talk about it because they're at dinner, you know, they're around people. Percy is right there. Of course, they're not going to say anything. Well, nosy Percy is over there, and because if that he were to overhear that Harry snuck out, like, Percy's a head boy, he's all about the rules, like, he's not gonna be okay with that. So they can't talk about it right there. And then they go back up to the common room, and there's a little bit of commotion because of Fred and George. They set off a dozen dung bombs, because that's just what Fred and George do. It's the end of the term, it's Christmas break, you know, they're just in high spirits. And Harry, he doesn't want the twins to ask him about Hogsmeade, like, because they gave him the map that morning, and you know, he didn't want questions asked. And so he went up to his room and he pulled out the photo album that Hagrid gave him 2 years ago. This was at the end of the first book. Hagrid gave it to him, and Hagrid sent out letters to all of his parents, like friends and anybody that knew James and Lily and that might have had any pictures of them. And so Hagrid compiled this photo album for him. So Harry gets it out and he looks at it. And he looks for the wedding day picture. He's seen it before, but that's all he did was see it. He didn't know who the other people were in the picture or in the background or whatever. And so he looks and he recognizes that it's Sirius Black, because, you know, he's seen the wanted posters and a Daily Prophet. He knows what Sirius Black looks like. And he recognizes this person in this wedding photo with his dad and his mom is Sirius Black, because he was the best man at the wedding. That's what Harry found out today. And he sees his dad, you know, remember, these are moving pictures. They're Wizarding World, so it's moving pictures. And his dad is waving, and then his mom is all happy, arm in arm with his dad. And there, the best man. Harry had never given him thought before because he had no reason to. But now he definitely has reason to, and he recognizes this as Sirius Black. However, he doesn't look as sickly and sunken as he does in the wanted posters, because, you know, that's years in Azkaban will do that to you. And in this picture, he looks normal, he looks handsome, he looks happy, full of laughter. And Harry's wondering, like, I wonder if at this point Sirius Black was already working for Voldemort. At this point, he was plotting how he was going to betray his parents, how he was planning to turn in that information to Voldemort. And he was wondering, like, did he know that serving all those years in Azkaban would be the result of what he was going to do? Like, these are all questions that Harry's wondering, because he is just not doing good right now. Again, this is the worst information that Harry could have heard. So Harry has all these questions, and he's wondering, like, how come the dementors don't affect him? Because that's the information Fudge gave. Apparently the dementors are not affecting Sirius as they should be, sort of. And remember, that's because Sirius knows that he is innocent. And that is what helps him hold on to his sanity, is the fact that he knows he is innocent. Harry decides to just slam the album shut. He puts it away and he lays down, gets underneath the covers, takes his glasses off. You know, he's going to bed. And they're like four-poster beds, so he can... It's like the curtains, you know, on those beds. Like, he's making sure that it's hiding him. He just needs to be in his little space right now. And he hears the dormitory door open, and it's Ron. He says, "Harry." His voice sounds a little bit uncertain. And Harry just lays still. He doesn't make a noise. He doesn't move. He pretends to be asleep. He needs to just be alone right now. He doesn't want to talk to anybody right now. And I do think that Ron knows this. Like, I'm pretty sure Ron knows he's pretending to be asleep. But Ron also knows, like, okay, he needs some space right now. My friend needs to be alone. He needs some space. It won't really do any good to talk to him right now. That's what I'm thinking, Ron. That's, like, Ron's train of thought right now. Like, he wants to talk to him. He wants to comfort him, see if he's okay. But also, there's not much Ron could offer right now, because it's, like, Ron will never know what any of that's like. All the information Harry heard right now. And Ron knows it was tough to hear. It's tough to stomach. You know, Ron was sitting there too, hearing all that. So he decides to just close the door, leave him alone, and just give him like some time. Because after hearing that information, you're not just going to fall asleep. No, like, you're going to be awake, just replaying that conversation over and over in your head. And so then Harry, he starts to get this like really bad feeling. It's described as... a hatred such as he had never known before was coursing through Harry like poison. He could see Black laughing at him through the darkness, as though somebody had pasted the picture from the album over his eyes. He watched as though somebody was playing him a piece of film. Sirius Black blasting Peter Pettigrew, who resembled Neville Longbottom, into 1,000 pieces. He could hear, having no idea what Black's voice might sound like, a low, excited mutter. "It has happened, my lord. The Potters have made me their secret keeper." And then came another voice, laughing shrilly. The same laugh that Harry heard inside his head whenever the Dementors drew near. So this is what Harry is thinking of. It's just intense hatred, because it's like this person who was supposedly my parents' best friend and so close to my dad that they were like brothers, betrayed them and led them to their deaths. He is the reason I'm an orphan right now. That's kind of what's going through Harry's head. And... it's, of course, that's going to lead to hatred. You know, he's not happy. He's a Gryffindor. He's not just going to let it go. Harry is not, he's not okay with this. And it's, he's going through a lot, and he's just replaying this in his head. And a few things here with Harry's little movie playing in his head that he's imagining right now. So Sirius Black blasting Peter Pettigrew, we know that didn't happen. Peter Pettigrew faked his death, you know. And also, Peter Pettigrew resembled Neville Longbottom. That's what Harry thinks based on pictures of him he's seen. So, with that information, I said last episode how McGonagall was saying, "I always felt bad, or I feel bad now, because I was always really sharp with Peter Pettigrew when he was at Hogwarts, and now she feels terrible because he's apparently dead and he died a hero or whatever." And I said in last episode that reminds me of how she treats Neville. Like, sometimes she's just too harsh with Neville, like, to the point where it's not helping him in any way, just a little too harsh. And so that, like, and I said that in that episode, like, you need to calm down on Neville then, like, ease up a little bit. You're not doing him any favors by being so strict and harsh with him, like too much, not even like a helpful bit. It's a little detrimental to him. I guess it helps Neville in the long run and makes him stronger or whatever, but he has a miserable time like during it. So I did say that about Neville, and then I totally forgot that there's a slight comparison in the book, like that he resembles Neville in a way, like physically. So that's another connection too. Harry has a hard time falling asleep that night. It's like daybreak by the time he even falls asleep. And when he gets up, the dormitory room is empty, and he goes down to the common room, and Ron and Hermione are there. And they tell him that he looks terrible. Like, obviously, he didn't sleep well. You guys were there. You know what he heard last night. Of course he's going to look terrible, you guys. Seriously? You don't need to tell him that. And Hermione is doing homework. It's the holidays now. Remember, she has a bunch of classes. She's using the time turner to go back in time to attend them all. So she has a bunch of homework and studying and everything, reading to do. So she has her homework spread out over three tables, and Ron and Hermione are the only ones in the common room. Of course, Crookshanks is there too, sitting by the fire. And, you know, Harry's like, where is everybody? He's a little disoriented. And Ron tells him, it's the first day of holidays. Remember, like, pretty much everyone's at home. He's like, I was going to go wake you. It's almost lunchtime. So Harry he fell asleep late and he woke up late. So again, it is mentioned, you really don't look well, you know, like Hermione tells him that. And it's like, we know, Hermione. And I don't think necessarily that he looks like tired. He is tired, but they sense that change in him. Have he started feeling that hatred last night? Like that anger and that rage, like it's probably somehow showing on him. And even if it's just like a slight physical difference, like a physical change in appearance, Ron and Hermione know Harry well enough to where they can tell that it's affecting him in such a way. And so while he was asleep, Ron and Hermione rehearsed a little speech to tell Harry, which I'm glad that they rehearsed it. They say, or Hermione starts off, but she says, Harry, listen, like, I know you must be really upset about what we heard yesterday, but you can't do anything stupid. And Harry's like, okay, like what? And Ron just says right away, very sharply, like, go looking for Black. Don't do that. And Ron tells him that Black is not worth dying for. And Harry realizes that they just don't understand at all. He just looks at them and realizes that they don't know what he's going through. And he decides to tell them, like, this is the first time that he's told them. He hasn't told Ron and Hermione this yet. Do you know what I see and hear every time a Dementor gets too close to me? They don't know, but they're worried for what his answer is. And he says, I can hear my mom screaming and pleading with Voldemort. And if you'd heard your mom screaming like that, just about to be killed, you wouldn't forget it in a hurry. And if you found out that someone who was supposed to be a friend of hers betrayed her and said Voldemort after her, and then Hermione just interrupts him and says that there's nothing that you can do, the Dementors are going to catch Black and he'll go to Azkaban. And Harry tells him, like, you heard what Fudge said. He isn't affected by Azkaban like others are. The Dementors don't have an effect on him for some reason. And it's because he's innocent. They don't know that, though. And he says that being in Azkaban is not a punishment for him like it is for others. So Ron is getting nervous and he's like, okay, so what are you saying? Like, what do you think is punishment? What do you want to do? Do you want to, like, kill Black or something? And Hermione's like panics and she's like, don't be silly, Ron, like, you wouldn't do that, would you, Harry? And Harry just doesn't have an answer. He says that, or he doesn't say this, but he's thinking, like, he doesn't know what he wants to do, but he wants to do something. Like, he can't even stand the fact that Black is just out on the loose and Harry is doing nothing. Like, he feels like he needs to do something. And then all of a sudden he remembers that Malfoy knows, because that one day in Potions, after he was back from the hospital wing, after the Buckbeak incident, where he's saying that his arm was so injured and he was faking it, like milking the injury that was already healed, Malfoy had to be at a table with Ron and Harry, and because Snape made Ron and Harry like cut up his potions ingredients and stuff for him, because Malfoy claimed he couldn't do it. And Malfoy took the opportunity to talk in a low whisper and, like, told Harry, like, oh yeah, I'd want revenge if I were you after Black. And Harry was like, what are you talking about? It was this. So Malfoy knows. Remember Malfoy's dad, Lucius, he works in the ministry. Like, he heard some stuff. He was also a Death Eater. Like, he doesn't know that Peter or Sirius were Death Eaters. Like, no one knew that they were Death Eaters. And I say no one knew that they, because Peter Pettigrew is the actual Death Eater and no one knew about that. And Sirius Black, who isn't a Death Eater, but they think is, the actual Death Eaters had no idea. So that's why I say it that way. But Harry's saying, like, Malfoy knows. Remember what he told me in Potions about how, like, if I was you, I would hunt them down myself. I would want revenge. That's what Harry's remembering, like. So other people know. I just found out by accident. And so Ron's, like, all mad. He's like, you're not actually going to take Malfoy's advice instead of ours. He's telling him, like, you know what Peter Pettigrew's mother got back after Black was done with him? And he's saying that his dad told him. Ron's dad didn't tell Ron about, like, all the backstory of the Godfather or in the betrayal and all that. But he does know about Peter Pettigrew. So Ron tells Harry that his dad, Mr. Weasley, told Ron that after Peter Pettigrew was supposedly killed by Sirius Black and, like, brutally murdered and destroyed, that they went to give his mother, Peter's mother, the Order of Merlin first class, and they also gave him, or they gave her, Peter Pettigrew's finger, because that was the biggest bit of Peter Pettigrew that they could find, because he was apparently so brutally destroyed by Black. Again, not the case. Peter Pettigrew cut off his finger to fake his death, to make it look like he was brutally destroyed, even though Peter Pettigrew was the one who killed all those Muggles with the explosion. And that is the reason that his Animagus form, as Scabbers, is missing a toe, because of that cut off finger. So that is that whole, like, reasoning right there. And what really grinds my gears, oh god, it makes me so mad, is that Peter Pettigrew, in his Animagus form as Scabbers, is just sitting here listening to this whole conversation. He has been listening the whole time to everything. The last, like, 2 years, anytime Scabbers has been in Ron's pocket or been around, he's listening to what Harry, Ron, Hermione say. And so you already know, like, whatever information, who knows what he has told Voldemort about what he's learned about Harry from being in the Weasley household all these years, and from being Ron's pet and being around Harry all the time, because Ron was always around Harry. Like, that is so messed up on so many levels. That's why people, like, it's annoying when people are like, oh, Slytherins are mean. Like, no, there is no, that's not a criteria for being a Slytherin. The sorting hat doesn't look inside your mind and it's like, oh, this person's mean, they're going in Slytherin. That's not how it works. And I always say that Peter Pettigrew is, like, one of the worst characters. He's a really well-written character, but one of the worst in terms of, like, morality. He's terrible, and he's a Gryffindor. Like, come on, that's a terrible argument. Mean? No, you're not a Slytherin. But I digress. Anyways, it just, imagine, like, all the stuff he chose to tell Voldemort or didn't choose to tell Voldemort after the events of this book, when he goes and seeks him out and helps him rise to power once more. Like, there's so much information that he could have told Voldemort about Harry after being around him for almost 3 years at this point. It's just so crazy. So Harry tells Ron and Hermione that Malfoy, as in Draco Malfoy, probably knows, because his dad Lucius was right in Voldemort's inner circle as a Death Eater, and he was in Voldemort's inner circle, but again, like, they had no idea that Sirius was a Death Eater. He's not, but everyone thinks he is. And even Voldemort's inner circle had no idea. And they had no idea that Peter Pettigrew was a Death Eater. Like, I'm telling you, Voldemort is not, like, really the gossiping type, necessarily. I wouldn't say. So, and he has somebody who is a really close lieutenant, who's a really close Death Eater or whatever, and who can get him information that his other Death Eaters can't. He's not going to reveal that identity, you know? So people had no idea. Like, the Death Eaters that were in Voldemort's inner circle had absolutely no idea. And it also makes you wonder, like, Bellatrix Lestrange, she was in Voldemort's inner circle, and her cousin was Sirius Black, and she always knew Sirius Black was, like, a blood traitor. Like, she got bad vibes from him. She didn't like all that, right? So it kind of makes me wonder, like, once she was in Azkaban and her cousin Sirius Black was in Azkaban, she was like, wow, I had no idea that you were a Death Eater just like me. Like, I wonder how that would have played out, and I would have loved to have some sort of, like, conversation like that. But she killed him, so, you know, this isn't until the fifth book, but that happens. And we don't have a conversation like that. But anyways, back to the conversation that Harry is having with Ron and Hermione. And he's telling them that, again, Malfoy's dad must have told him because he was right in Voldemort's inner circle. And again, Ron doesn't like hearing the name Voldemort, but Harry's not afraid to say it. So Ron is, like, getting angry, like, say you know who. Like, it stresses him out. He was raised that way, to where hearing you say you know who, you say human, it's not be named. You don't use Voldemort, because that is scary to say that. So that's what Ron tells him, like, say you know who, will you? So Harry's, like, saying, so obviously the Malfoys knew Black was working for Voldemort. And then they're like, Harry, get a grip. Malfoy would love to see you blown into a million pieces. Like, he just doesn't want to play you in Quidditch. Like, of course Malfoy is going to just tell you anything to make you mad, and he's going to hope that you get yourself killed. But, like, because he just doesn't like you. That's Malfoy. He's just a mean, terrible little kid. And so Hermione is, like, pleading with Harry at this point. She has tears in her eyes. And she's telling her, like, Harry, please, like, please be sensible. This is what Black wants. And she's saying that you're going to be playing right into Black's hands if you went looking for him. And she's saying, like, your parents would never want you to do this. They wouldn't want you to get hurt or to go looking for him. And Harry's like, he says something, and he says, I'll never know what they would have wanted, because thanks to Black, I've never spoken to them, because they were killed, because they were betrayed by their best friend. But it wasn't Sirius Black, it was Peter Pettigrew. I want you guys to remember that. But again, they don't find us out until the end of the book. And so then there is like a silence, because Harry just totally like was correct with that statement. Like, well, Hermione, I don't know what they would have wanted. I don't know if they wouldn't have wanted me to go looking for him, because thanks to him, they're dead. So I don't know. I've never talked to them before. I don't know what they would want. So it's a little tense right now. That was an intense statement. So they all just take a bit of time. They're silent for a little bit. Crookshanks is just stretching by the fire, and Ron's pocket is like quivering. It's like shaking. And this is because Scabbers is in there. Like, they all know Scabbers is in his pocket, but they don't know Scabbers is actually Peter Pettigrew, the one who betrayed his parents. So imagine like being Peter Pettigrew, people thinking you're dead, and all of a sudden, you know, Sirius Black has escaped Azkaban, and you're the only one alive who knows that he's not going to come after Harry. He's coming after you, because he's the only one alive that knows the truth. And now he knows you're alive. So now you're all stressed out, and that's why you're in your rat form, losing weight and looking sickly and stuff. It's because you're stressed out. You know he's coming to kill you. You know you're scared of that. So, and hearing all this information right now, being around Harry and Hermione and Ron, and hearing this and hearing that Harry is so mad at Sirius Black. Like, of course he wants to go looking for Black. Like, he wants revenge. Knowing that Harry feels this way about Sirius Black, when Harry actually is going to feel this way about Peter Pettigrew. Like, Peter Pettigrew is actually the one. Like, they have the wrong man, right? So take away Sirius Black and put Peter Pettigrew there. Peter Pettigrew is right there in Ron's pocket. He has been hiding for 12 years in rat form, and he's been around Harry for 2 years because he's been Ron's pet in his pocket, right? So this is very much like why he's shaking in Ron's pocket right now. He's even more terrified to know that Harry feels this way right now about the person who betrayed his parents. Like, not only is Sirius Black after him, but now it seems like Harry's after him, even though Harry doesn't know the truth yet. He doesn't know it's Peter Pettigrew. So Scabbers in his Peter Pettigrew form is very much like he's scared, and rightfully so. He should be. I hope he's scared. I'm glad he's scared. So silent for a little bit. And then Ron's like, okay, I need to get something to change the subject. And his idea is to go visit Hagrid. Like, it's the holidays. It's almost Christmas. We haven't seen him for a bit. Like, let's go visit him. We know he's upset about the whole Buckbeak situation. And Hermione's like, no, Harry's not supposed to be, like, outside of the castle. Like, no, Ron, that's a bad idea. And Harry's like, no, I think it's a great idea. Let's go down there and I can ask him how come he never mentioned Black when he told me about my parents. And Ron realizes, like, okay, yep, that's not changing the subject. He's like, okay, let's just play some chess instead. Like, let's just stay inside Gobstones. We could play that. And Ron and Harry's like, nope, we're not doing that. We are going to Hagrid's, or I'm going at least. So they all get their cloaks. They get through the portrait hole. They hear Sir Cadogan challenging them to a fight, as he always does. Remember, Sir Cadogan is the temporary Gryffindor portrait hole entrance, as the fat lady is taking a sabbatical after Sirius Black slashed her portrait after she refused to let him in. Remember, that was on Halloween. This is December right now. But he tried to get in because he was going to go kill Pettigrew. So that was that whole thing. It wasn't to kill Harry. But again, there's so many misunderstandings throughout this whole book. So they go across the grounds. It's powdery, glittery snow, so it sounds really pretty, but it's also like freezing, and it's like the snow, of course, it's wet, so they're like soaking wet, and like their cloaks are wet, and they're freezing, and they're just getting across to Hagrid's. And the Forbidden Forest, that's where Hagrid's hut, where he lives, is like right on the edge of the Forbidden Forest. And the Forbidden Forest even looks pretty. It looks as though it had been enchanted. Each tree smattered with silver, and Hagrid's hut, it looks like it's like covered in like icing, like an ice cake because of the snow. So it sounds very pretty. I love that description. But they knock on the door and there's no answer. But there is like a weird noise. Ron puts his ear to the door and it's a strange noise. They're like, what is that? And then Ron's like, okay, maybe it's Fang. And Harry and Hermione hear, but it's like just, it's a weird sound. It's these low, like throbbing moans and groans and like sad sounds. And Ron's getting nervous. Like, should we go and get someone? Because this is, it's just a weird sound. And Harry's like knocking on the door and he's like, Hagrid, hello, are you in there? And you hear the door open, or you hear the footsteps and the door open, and it's Hagrid. And he, you can tell he has just been crying and sobbing. His eyes are super red and swollen. Tears are streaming down his face. And that was the noise they were hearing. It wasn't the dog Fang. It was Hagrid sobbing. So you know that he's upset about something. And Hagrid kind of thinks that the trio came to visit him because they've heard the bad news. And Hagrid flings himself around Harry's neck like in like a sad hug. Like, you know, that's how it's described. But it's not funny because Hagrid is twice the size of a normal man because he's half giant. They don't find that out until the fourth year. But he's half giant, so he's huge. So it's kind of like strange. And so Harry, who's about to collapse like under Hagrid's weight, Ron and Hermione like grab Hagrid by the arms and they put him into a chair and they're like, okay, Hagrid, what's going on? Because they're all like confused, like why he's sobbing like so uncontrollably like this. So he points out a letter and he has Harry read it. And it says, Dear Mr. Hagrid, further to our inquiry into the attack by a hippogriff on a student in your class, we have accepted the assurances of Professor Dumbledore that you bear no responsibility for the regrettable incident. However, we must register our concern about the hippogriff in question. We have decided to uphold the official complaint of Mr. Lucius Malfoy, and this matter will therefore be taken to the Committee for the Disposal of Dangerous Creatures. The hearing will take place on April 20th, and we ask you to present yourself and your hippogriff at the committee's offices in London on that date. In the meantime, the hippogriff should be tethered and isolated. Yours in fellowship, and it's just a whole list of the school governors, their signatures. So this is scary. This is why Hagrid is really upset. Lucius Malfoy, who is known to bribe people and threaten them, like, is probably going to get... He already launched this complaint. Like, this is not a good outcome, is what Hagrid's thinking. Like, this is going to be a bad outcome because of Lucius Malfoy. So it's good that Professor Dumbledore has vouched for Hagrid, saying that he has no responsibility to Buckbeak's actions, but still there is going to be a hearing. And so that's why he's like really upset. And, you know, they're kind of understanding like why he's nervous. And Hagrid's like all upset, saying like, I can't just leave him tied up there alone, out in the snow at Christmas. So he's in the corner of the cabin. He's inside with them right now. He's like eating something. It's just blood everywhere. He's eating like a dead animal or whatever. So Harry, Ron, Hermione, they all look at each other. They all exchange that look because Hagrid's idea of just interesting and cool and cute, fun creatures are like terrifying creatures to other people. So still, there's not really any harm to Buckbeak. Like Harry rode Buckbeak, you know, he was able to do the ritual and Buckbeak trusts him. So he doesn't really see how there's any harm in Buckbeak. And they 100% know that the Malfoys, Lucius and Draco, are just completely milking this and they want to make Hagrid miserable. And that is why they are doing this. They just want him gone. So Hermione thinks like, okay, so this is what we're going to do. You have to put together a really good defense to prove that Buckbeak is safe. And Hagrid is saying that it doesn't even matter because, like I had mentioned, like Lucius Malfoy, the Committee for the Disposal of Magical Creatures, they are scared of Lucius Malfoy. They're all in his pocket. Like, he's bribing them. He's threatening them. Like, no matter what I say, it's just not going to work. And so Harry asks, okay, how about Dumbledore? And Hagrid says, like, no, he's already done enough. He's too busy. He's running this school. Plus, the Dementors are annoying him. They're looking for Sirius Black and everything. And at the mention of Sirius Black, Ron and Hermione look to Harry instantly. Because they're like expecting Harry to start like telling Hagrid, okay, well, you know what? I was there yesterday when you guys were talking about Sirius Black and I heard the truth and you've kept that from me. But Harry just can't bring himself to do it. He sees Hagrid so miserable and scared. He just knows that like he just can't bring it up right now. And that's really good of Harry. Harry, he's being a good friend to Hagrid right now. He heard all that information and Hagrid kept it from him, and he knows that there's a reason why. And he's about to start asking, but he knows, like, he loves Buckbeak, he loves his creatures, and to hear that there's going to be this trial that will most likely be a bad outcome, he sees that Hagrid is depressed right now, and he's miserable. He's been going through it, so he decides to just not bring it up. So that's a really good friend in Harry to not say anything right now. So instead of asking him about, like, hey, why didn't you tell me all this, Harry's like, okay, Hagrid, like, don't give up. Hermione's right. You just need a good defense. Like, the three of us will serve as witnesses if you need. And Hermione, who does a bunch of reading, of course, she says that she has read a case before about a hippogriff and where the hippogriff got off, like, on a trial. It was, like, a case of hippogriff baiting. And she's like, I'll look into it for you, Hagrid. I'll see exactly what happened. So Hagrid is still upset, still sobbing, and Harry and Hermione, their ideas of comfort were pretty practical. Ron, they look at him like, okay, Ron, we both said something, your turn. And Ron's like, okay, should I make a cup of tea? And Harry just stares at him like, why would you make a cup of tea? And Ron says, like, what? That's what my mom does whenever someone's upset. And so it's still practical. It's a nice little comfort, you know, and I think that's nice of Ron. Like, he has so many siblings, and anytime someone's upset, like, if their mom makes a cup of tea, that's what reminds him of home. That's what comfort is to him. So I think that's still nice, like, for Ron to say that, to offer that up. And the trio, they just keep reassuring Hagrid. They keep, telling him comforting things and everything. And then after a while, Hagrid says, you know what? You're right. I can't afford to go to pieces. I have to pull myself together. And it's so true, Hagrid. Get yourself out of this bad place. You haven't been yourself for a while because you've been worried about Buckbeak and how people don't like your classes. But you need to just pull yourself up out of this dark place and keep moving forward. And so as soon as he mentions that I've been worried about people not liking my classes, the trio starts to lie right away. They're like, no, that's nonsense. We do like them. And they're great. Like, he's like, no, we love these classes. And Ron's even like, how are the flowerworms? You know, he's like trying to like fake his interest in his class. And Hagrid says that they're dead. The flowerworms died because they ate too much lettuce. And so again, it's just, there's just one thing after another. And Ron's like, oh no, that's not good. That sucks. Sorry, Hagrid. Like, they're saying whatever they can to try to reassure Hagrid and make him feel okay. And Hagrid also mentions that the Dementors everywhere, like outside of the Hogwarts grounds and Hogsmeade, they've been making him feel absolutely miserable. And it reminds him of his time in Azkaban. Remember, he was there two times because of the Chamber of Secrets. He was wrongfully imprisoned. He was framed the first time when he was at Hogwarts. And that's what caused him to be expelled from Hogwarts and had his wand broken. And the second time was just last year in the second book, where the Ministry of Magic, Cornelius Fudge, the minister, he wanted to make it look like the ministry was doing something. So he was like, well, let's just put you in Azkaban to make it look like we're doing something, even though Dumbledore insists that you didn't have anything to do with it because you didn't the first time. Like, so the second, that's why Hagrid was back at Azkaban a second time. It was just completely unnecessary and wrong both times that he went. But he was in Azkaban, and the Dementors, they didn't affect him as much as others, kind of similar to Sirius Black, where Hagrid knew he was innocent, but also he's half giant, so that kind of helped with combating a little bit. But still, they still got to him. They still made him feel worse. They just didn't drive him insane like other prisoners, and similar to Black, they didn't drive him insane. And so he kind of gets PTSD, like, whenever he wants to go get a drink in the Three Broomstick and there's Dementors, like, around. Like, it reminds him of being in Azkaban. So he hasn't been feeling good the last few months here at Hogwarts. And the trio right away are pretty curious, because Hagrid has never talked about his brief times in Azkaban before. So Hermione, like, says, is it really as awful as they say in there, Hagrid? Like, what's it really like? And Hagrid goes really quiet, and he's like, you have no idea. I've never been anywhere like it. He thought he was going mad. Like, he feels that way. He wasn't actually driven insane, but that's how he felt. And he was saying he just kept going over all the horrible, horrible stuff in his mind. That's all he can do in Azkaban, is you just relive all the terrible moments of your life. And the ones he mentions are the day he got expelled from Hogwarts when he was wrongfully accused of opening Chamber of Secrets. Remember, Tom Riddle, aka Voldemort, literally framed this Hagrid like into making people think that he opened the chamber when that wasn't the case because of Aragog, his that Arachomantula that they met last year in the forest, Harry and Ron. That was that whole story. And so he replayed that day in his mind, getting expelled and arrested. And the day his dad died, and like the day he had to let Norbert go. So that was in the first book, Harry, Ron, Hermione's first year, the dragon Norbert, he had to let it go because they're like, Hagrid, you cannot keep this dragon. It's going to grow too big. Like, it just wasn't rational. And he loved that dragon, but he had to let it go. And so Ron's brother came and like picked it up and everything. Or it wasn't Ron's brother. He sent like two of his like friends or coworkers to go get the dragon because they work at like a dragon rehabilitation zoo type of, not a zoo, like as in like a spectacle, but like a rehab center kind of for dragons and stuff, like working with dragons in the wild in Romania. That's what one of Ron's older brothers does. And so he replays that day in his mind. Remember, that was in the first year of Hogwarts, like Harry, Ron, Hermione's year. And in their second year, last year, he got sent to Azkaban again because that was the whole Chamber of Secrets thing. And that second time, he was replaying the Norbert incidents, right? And then his eyes start to fill with tears, and he's saying that you can't really remember who you are in there when you're in there for a while. Like, you start to not see the point of living. And he even says that he used to hope he would die in his sleep. Like, he would just be in Azkaban and hope to just die as he was falling asleep. That's how bad it was. And, like, when he was let out, he felt like he was born again. Like, he was new. He was, like, born anew. And everything, like, came flooding back, like, happy memories. And it was the absolute best feeling in the world, all these happy memories coming back. Hagrid also says that the Dementors were not happy to see him go because they don't like when prisoners get released. And Hermione's like, what? But you were innocent. And Hagrid's like, that does not matter to them. Same with Sirius Black. Remember, like, they don't care if people are innocent because feeding off of someone's bad memories, that happens whether they're innocent or not. As long as they have a couple of hundred students, or not students, humans in prison that they can just feed on all their happiness, and they don't care. They don't care who's guilty. They don't care who's innocent. And so it's quiet for a little bit too, because everyone's like taking all this in, right? Then he says, like, I did think about letting Buckbeak just go, letting him fly away. But he's saying you can't really explain to a Hippogriff that they need to go into hiding and they can't fly back here. So he was like, that wouldn't work. And he doesn't want to break the law because he doesn't want to get sent back to Azkaban. It's rough. Like, he starts crying even more. Like, and it's true. Like, of course, Hagrid wants the best for Buckbeak. It's like his pet. Like, he loves this creature and he doesn't want to let him go. He doesn't want to let him go because he loves him. But he wants to let him go because he doesn't want the trial to happen and have a bad outcome and have Buckbeak get executed or something bad. But he can't do that because then he'll be breaking the law. And then he doesn't want to get sent back to Azkaban for a third time and be like, he just explained to them how miserable and how terrible it was. All those things I just said that Hagrid was telling them. So again, like, Hagrid is in a really rough position here. And he, of course, is going to send him into like a depression of sorts. And it's a really low point for him. So they start to say, like, okay, Hagrid, like, this is how we're going to help you. And Harry, if Sirius Black is still on his mind, of course. But again, seeing Hagrid at this low point, he's like, I'm not gonna bring it up right now. Like, that wouldn't be a cool thing for me to do. So basically, they start to think, okay, Hagrid, we're gonna help you win this case. Here's what we're gonna do. They go to the library the very next day, and they check out all these books, and it's like any information that would help them build up a good defense for Buckbeak. And the next day, they really just sit all day reading just famous cases of all these different creatures and beasts and what worked and what didn't, and they're trying to help him in this trial. They don't really talk much, they're just reading. The only times they speak up are like when they read something that they're like, okay, this is relevant, this could help us. However, they don't really talk much because there aren't many cases that are helpful. Like, there was one about Hippogriff in 1722, but it was convicted, so that was not helpful. And then there was another one in 1296, so even earlier than 1722. And basically, they found out that they let the manticore off. Like, they let the manticore go free. That's only because everyone was too scared to go near it. So, and that was about, like, a manticore, like, savage someone. So, like, attack someone. But again, they were too scared to go near it, so it wasn't convicted. But they're not really, like, finding out good information. But something a little more positive at this point in the chapter is the Christmas decorations. I love the descriptions and the visuals of the Christmas decorations. And that is one thing the movies do a really good job of. And in the series, like, when they do the TV series, I can't wait to have, like, all the details from the book. And that means we're probably going to see Christmas, like, every time in the series. We usually do in the movies too. It's pretty much like it's in every movie, but I mean, like, I really want to see all the decorations and how they do the sets. Like, the movies are beautiful, but still, like, I want, like, that's the point of the series, right? All us fans want every detail from the books. We don't want characters left out. We don't want random things changed. And I think a lot of the visuals are part of it, so I'm very excited for that. But basically, the description is, like, the rest of the castle is all Christmassy. There's magnificent Christmas decorations. Despite the fact that barely any students stayed at Hogwarts over the holidays, they pretty much all went home to their families. Part of the reason is because of Sirius Black being around Hogsmeade. Of course, they're kind of scared. But there's thick streamers of holly and mistletoe everywhere. There's lights that are shining from inside every suit of armor, looking all, like, Christmassy and festive. The Great Hall always has 12 Christmas trees. Sometimes they're decorated with real live fairies. Right now, they all have really pretty glittering gold stars. And there's, like, always a smell of delicious cooking. The house elves that work in the kitchens, they cook and clean and everything. They are really outdoing themselves. Like, it's delicious smells, like, wafting throughout the corridors. And now it's Christmas Eve. And the smell, like, for the Christmas feast that they're preparing. It's even gotten so strong that even Scabbers, who has been, like, a recluse, like, hiding all the time, which they think is due to Crookshanks. It's not. It's because he's scared of Sirius Black finding him. Even he has been poking his little rat nose outside of Ron's pocket and to sniff, like, all the food, right? So eventually, like, you know, the week goes by, and it is now Christmas time. And Ron wakes Harry up by throwing a pillow at him. So, you know, not the best way to wake someone up, but it is probably one of the most effective. And he tells Harry, like, come on, presents, let's go open them. So Harry grabs his glasses, and all the presents are, like, at the foot of their beds, like, at the end of them. That's where they have them. At Hogwarts, usually, it's, like, in the rooms. They magically appear there. They're brought by house elves and then their pets, Hedwig, whatever it is. And Mrs. Weasley, of course, knitted her sweaters again. She gave Ron a maroon one. And Harry has a scarlet sweater from her, and it has a Gryffindor lion knitted on the front of it. I love that she, like, knits him a sweater as well. And he also has a bunch of sweets. Like, there's home-baked mince pies, Christmas cake, nut brittle. Like, that was nice of the Weasleys to, you know, do that for Harry. And then he, like, moves, like, all those, like, sweets aside. And he sees, like, a long, thin package. And he's, like, wondering, like, huh. Him and Ron are both, like, kind of wondering what that is. And he opens it, unwraps it, and it is the most magnificent, gleaming, shiny broomstick. And Ron, who was opening socks, like a pair of maroon socks, drops the socks, and he rushes over to Harry's bed. And they both just stare, and they can't believe it. It's a firebolt. Remember, the title of this chapter is the firebolt. Like, that is the main focus of this chapter. Or, like, not the main focus, but Harry's main focus. Like, one of them. Like, he is just enthralled by this. Like, he heard this terrible news, like, a week ago or whatever about Sirius Black. And now seeing this firebolt, that is what is on his mind at this very moment. Like, this is the most insane thing. Remember when he was staying at Diagon Alley? At the beginning of this book, after running away from the Dursleys' house, he stayed in Diagon Alley, and every single day he went to go look at that firebolt. His Nimbus 2000 was perfectly fine at that point, but he just loved looking at the firebolt. It was just the most amazing broom he had ever seen. But remember, a few weeks ago at that Quidditch game versus Hufflepuff, during the crazy storm and when the Dementors appeared and Harry fainted, and it was all windy and crazy weather, his Nimbus 2000, his broomstick, got blown away with the wind, and it ended up in the Whomping Willow. Remember that tree that just goes crazy? And it completely destroyed his broomstick, like, unable to be repaired, completely destroyed. So now Harry, he's been having to use, like, the school brooms for the last few weeks for practicing, and they haven't been very good. Like, those brooms are not, like, they're old and they're just not great. Not like his Nimbus 2000. And definitely not like this Firebolt. Him and Ron, Harry and Ron are big Quidditch people. So you already know that, like, he, oh my gosh, this is the best present he could have ever gotten. So he's very excited right now. So a little bit of a description of, like, what's going on. It was a Firebolt, of course. And it's identical to the dream broom Harry had gone to see every day in Diagon Alley. Its handle glittered as he picked it up. He could feel it vibrating and let go. It hung in midair, unsupported, at exactly the right height for him to mount it. His eyes moved from the golden registration number at the top of the handle, right down to the perfectly smooth, streamlined birch twigs that made up the tail. And so Ron's like, who sent this to you? Like, who would have given you this very expensive gift right when you needed it? And I'm going to tell you, like, their theories about, like, who sent it. I'm going to tell you who actually sent it to him. Harry is, like, saying, well, look for a card. Like, maybe there's a card, like, in the wrappings. And Ron's ripping the wrappings apart. He's saying there's no card. But, like, who would spend this much money on you? And Harry's, like, completely stumped. He's like, I have no idea. I'm pretty sure it was not the Dursleys. Like, I think we all know it wasn't. And Ron, it's, you know, they're not taking their eyes off the firebolt. And Ron's just staring at it and he's, like, circling it, looking around, looking at all the angles of it. And he's like, okay, well, I bet that it was Dumbledore. Like, he gifted you the invisibility cloak the first year. And Harry's like, yeah, but that was because it was my dad's. It technically already belonged to me. And he was just, like, gifting it to me, passing it on to me. He wouldn't spend hundreds and hundreds of galleons on me. He can't just go around gifting students these types of things. He's a headmaster. He can't do that. And Ron's like, well, obviously, maybe he would, but he just wouldn't say that it's from him. He's not going to leave a card. Like, then you're going to have people like Draco Malfoy going around and being like, oh, he's playing favorites or whatever. And he's like, wait a second. And then he just starts laughing. Ron is like, gives a whoop of laughter. And he's like, Malfoy, like, imagine his face. Like, just wait until he sees you on this broom. He'll just be sick to his stomach. It's going to make him so upset. And he's like, this is an international standard broom. Anybody is going to be jealous and unbelievable. And he's like, I cannot wait to see Malfoy's face. And Harry is still like, I just can't believe it. And he's just running his hand along the firebolt. And Ron just collapses onto Harry's bed, just uncontrollable laughter. He's just the thought of Malfoy. Like, this part is so funny. I feel so bad. But because remember, Lupin is all shabby and he's very poor. He has really, really like... He looks poor. He looks sick. He looks shabby. That's mentioned almost every time Lupin is in front of them. Like, that his clothes are all patched and frayed. And he's poor, right? So, Ron, like, he's already laughing because he's, like, Malfoy's impressed. Like, imagining Malfoy seeing him on this broom. And then Ron's, like, kind of composed. He's like, oh, that's funny. Like, when Malfoy sees you, he's like, oh, Lupin probably sent this to you. And then Harry is like, what? And then Harry starts laughing. Like, Lupin could not afford this. He can't even afford, like, normal clothes. He says, listen, like, if he had this much gold, he would be able to buy himself some new robes, some new clothes. So Harry starts laughing at that. And I feel so bad that I think it's funny that Harry finds that funny. I just think that's so funny. Like, there's a lot of humor in Harry Potter. And anytime I see the movies, like, there's some parts that I still laugh so much, even though I've seen them so many times. Like, and even these books, I read some parts and I still laugh every time I read certain parts. And like, one example, last night when I was watching Deathly Hallows Part 1, there's a part where when Ron comes back to Harry and Hermione, and he's like, oh yeah, Harry, like, I took this wand off some snatchers. You need a wand, right? And Harry tries it out and at the flame in the jar, and he says Engorgio, and it goes huge with that new wand. And right away, Reducto, and Hermione's like, what's going on in there? Like, I mean, you know the part if you're familiar with that part in the movie, but I was laughing at that part, and I'm like, I've seen this so many times. I've watched all the Harry Potter movies. The actual amount I've watched them is insane. I've seen them so many times. I wish I would have counted from the time that I was 5 years old and I started watching them. And because I'm 20 years later, like, the true number is probably, like, very unbelievable. But every time I just laugh, and that this is one of those parts where I just think it's so funny. But anyways, Ron is saying, like, okay, yeah, maybe he can't afford it per se, but he does like you. And he was away when your Nimbus got smashed. Like, maybe that was when he was in Diagon Alley and he heard about it and he bought you the broom. And Harry's like, what do you mean? He wasn't away. He said that he was ill. And Ron's like, I mean, maybe, but remember Ron had detention and he was in the hospital wing. Like, that was part of his detention, was cleaning out the bedpans without using magic. That was what Snape assigned him. And Ron's like, he wasn't in there when I was doing my detention, so I don't know. And so Harry basically is like, I just can't see Lupin affording something like this. Like, that's kind of maybe an okay theory, but just no. I don't think this is from him. And then they were laughing, right? Just like I was just now. And Hermione's like, what are you two laughing at? Like, she just walks in because they're the only ones in the Gryffindor Tower. And their laughter is just echoing. And Hermione comes in to see what they're laughing about. And she has Crookshanks with her, who looks grumpy. And it's because Hermione tied tinsel around his neck. And of course, I love that. I think that is so festive. I'm very, very much like that as well. But Ron is mad. He's like, don't bring him in here. Scabbers is in here. So he snatches Scabbers from his bed really quick and steps him into his pajama pocket. But Hermione is not listening. She doesn't really care. She just drops Crookshanks onto Seamus's bed. And she just stares at the firebolt because she's like, wait, what is this? What, like, who gifted this to you, Harry? Because even Hermione, she's not, like, big into Quidditch, but even she knows that this is a top-notch best broom in the world, and it is very expensive. Remember, she was in Diagon Alley. She saw it. She recognizes it. She knows something is weird here. And she asks Harry, who sent this to you? Like, who sent this? This is intense. And Hermione, she's not really excited, and she's not really, like, intrigued by the broom per se. She's more like, wait a second, like, who sent this? Something is a little strange. Like, she's biting her lip. She looks nervous. And Ron's like, what's wrong? He asks her, what's the matter with you? Like, why are you looking like that? Like, what's the problem? Because Harry and Ron are just so enamored by this like firebolt that, like, they can't understand why she looks so apprehensive about it. And so Hermione just kind of says, like, well, it's a bit odd, isn't it? This is supposed to be, like, quite a good broom. And Ron just stares at her and says, like, annoyingly, like, Hermione, it's the best broom that there is. So she's like, okay, I mean, yeah, so it must mean it's very, very expensive. And Ron is like, yep, it probably costs more than all the Slytherin brooms put together. Remember last year in Chamber of Secrets in the second book, when Draco Malfoy made the Slytherin team, his dad, Lucius Malfoy, who was very rich, he bought the whole team Nimbus 2001s. So you know, Ron's like, yep, this broom, one broom alone probably costs more than all seven of their Nimbus 2001s, which are also very good brooms. Remember, Harry had a Nimbus 2000. So, and then the 2001 was obviously the newer version. So these are really just intense Quidditch brooms. And so Hermione's like, okay, well, who would send Harry something as expensive as this broom and not even send a card or say like, hey, I sent this to you. And Ron is impatient with her. He's just over it. He's like, who cares? Harry, can I have a go on it? Like, can I fly it after you've tried it? Like, he really wants to fly it. And Hermione's like, what? No, I don't think anyone should ride it just yet. Like, and then they just stare at her. They just cannot comprehend why Hermione is like being like a Debbie Downer right now on their parade. And so Ron says, like, what do you think that Harry is going to do with it? Sweep the floor? He literally tells that to her. Is he going to sweep the floor? Like, no, he's going to ride it. That's what you do with these broomsticks. And Hermione doesn't get a chance to answer because all of a sudden, Crookshanks leaps from Seamus's bed right at Ron, right onto Ron's chest. Because remember, he stuffed Scabbers into his pajama pocket. And so before Hermione can even like react and grab for Crookshanks, Ron freaks out and bellows at her, like, get him out of here, because Crookshanks is clawing at his pajamas. Like, Crookshanks rips Ron's pajamas trying to get to Scabbers. Scabbers kind of climbs out of his pocket and tries to escape over his shoulder, but Ron grabs him by the tail just in time, grabs Scabbers by the tail just in time as he tries to escape, and he tries to kick Crookshanks. He literally swings his leg and tries to kick Crookshanks, but he misses and hits Harry's trunk instead. And that, of course, that hurts because he was going to kick Crookshanks with some force. It wasn't like a soft little kick, as soft as a kick could be. It was like a full power-driven kick. Like, it would have caused some damage. It would have hurt. And he swung all that force in his leg at Harry's trunk on accident instead of Crookshanks. So, you know, when you stub your toe and it's so painful. Yeah, this is kind of what Ron is going through right now. Like, it hurt. And so there's all this commotion. Crookshanks is making noise. Scabbers is making his little rat noises, all scared. Ron's in pain because he kicked the trunk. And then you hear the tiny whistling of the sneak scope that starts to fill the room. The sneak scope had become dislodged from Uncle Vernon's socks. Remember, Ron sent that to Harry for his birthday in July. And so, because he got it like in Egypt or whatever. And it started whirling like on the Hogwarts Express because Scabbers was there, right? And Scabbers is not trustworthy. And the sneak scope, what it's supposed to do is it kind of like it's doing right now, it makes that shrill whistling noise anytime someone untrustworthy is around. So they think that it's just like, it's just effective, but it's not. It's because Scabbers is there, who is Peter Pettigrew, who is hiding in his animagus form. He is very untrustworthy. He's who is around that's untrustworthy. And that's why the sneak scope is going off. And Harry hid it in Uncle Vernon's socks like back in September on Hogwarts Express. And that's why he hasn't heard it for all these months. But now that Ron kicked that's how hard he kicked the trunk. He kicked it so hard that something became dislodged from those socks in there. And that's why it's like whirling around and making noise and everything. And Harry completely forgot about it because he doesn't wear those socks if he can help it, because they're Uncle Vernon's old socks. Like, no one wants to wear those. And like, it just keeps whirling and whistling, the sneak scope, and Crookshanks is like hissing and making these cat noises at it. And Ron is furious because he stubbed his toe, of course, and it hurts. And because Crookshanks tried to kill Scabbers yet again. And he tells Hermione, take that cat out of here. And Harry stuffs the sneak scope back into his trunk. And all he could hear now are Ron just his moans of pain and rage. Ron is so mad right now. And I mean, I get that. Like, a pet, he's very upset about his pet who he loves, and Crookshanks went to like attack the pet again. And it's wrong that he was trying to kick the cat. I don't condone that. But that was his reaction, because it was like a defense against his pet rat. And he kicked the trunk instead very hard, and now he's in pain with his toe. So that's what's going on with Ron right now. And Scabbers, who was all scared and shaking, he's huddled up in Ron's hands because he's, like, terrified. And Ron's, like, protecting him, right? And Harry, he really hasn't seen Scabbers often because Scabbers is always hiding in Ron's pocket. Because remember, Scabbers is Peter Pettigrew, and he is hiding from, like, everything. Like, he's hiding from Crookshanks. He's hiding because he doesn't want Sirius Black to somehow see him and come after him. So he's always hiding. So Harry hasn't really seen him in a while, despite always being around Ron. And Harry takes a look at him, and he sees that Scabbers, who used to be, like, really fat, is now very skinny because he's losing weight. He's stressed out. He's terrified. And he has patches of fur that seem to, like, fall out. And Harry decides to say, like, oh, yikes, he's not looking too good, is he? And Ron he's like, it's stress. He's stressed out. He'd be fine if that fur ball left him alone. Like, Crookshanks is part of the stress, but it's for sure Sirius Black. The furious Sirius Black coming after him is the big source of stress. And Harry thinks back to when they were in Diagon Alley over the summer, and they were in the Magical Menagerie when Ron was trying to get, like, some rat tonic for Scabbers, about how the shopkeeper was like, rats are really only supposed to live 3 years. And unless Scabbers has some powers that he's never revealed, he's probably dying. Like, this is, like, the end of his life. And Harry thinks, like, we know that Ron always complains about Scabbers, how he's useless and boring. Like, Harry knows that Ron would still be very miserable if Scabbers died, because that's his pet. So, you know, Harry knows that Ron would be very upset. So a little bit into about the theories of who gave Harry this broomstick. So it was Sirius Black, and I'm just letting you guys know that right now. Sirius Black gave Harry this broomstick. Remember, Sirius is not the Death Eater. He's not the evil madman we think he is. We all got the story wrong, right? It's actually Peter Pettigrew who did all these terrible things. So when Harry was at that Quidditch game, Hufflepuff, with the Quidditch game where he fainted, it's all the Dementors, and where his broomstick got blown into the Whomping Willow and destroyed, right? He saw the Grim at that game. He saw the big black dog, and that's Sirius's animagus form. And I mentioned in that episode that Sirius tells him later in this book that I went to go watch your game. Like, I wanted to go see you play. You play a lot like your dad. So that was just the godfather watching his godson play in Quidditch, right? That's what that was. And he saw, and somehow he sent an owl to Diagon Alley with the money, or with the Gringotts withdrawal number or something, and got that broomstick sent to Harry. That's how he did it. It's not clear how he did it, but he must have sent an owl and, like, sent his bank account number or something. Because Sirius Black, like, the Potters, they were very rich. The Potter family is very rich. Same with Sirius Black. The Black family, very rich. So money was not really an issue here. It makes me wonder, like, could Sirius have used it? Like, he could have just gotten some money sent to him from his account and gotten some, like, clothes and, like, rented a place, but, like, somehow did it in his dog form or in a disguise. I don't know. I wonder if he could have done that somehow. That's, like, another discussion for another day. But either way, Sirius Black is the one who got this present for Harry for Christmas. And it's a really nice thought. It's really nice that he did that. And Harry realizes that later on, once it's revealed that Sirius is innocent and a good person, and his godfather, who isn't malicious and a betrayer and all those things. He's not treacherous or anything. And the reason that Hermione was so skeptical, remember, Harry and Ron are all excited, and Ron couldn't believe that she wasn't excited over this. She was skeptical because she thinks that Sirius Black sent this broom. And Hermione, another example of how you are the brightest witch of your age. Yes, Sirius Black did send Harry this broom. And of course, she doesn't know he's innocent yet. And she thinks that he somehow sent Harry the broom and, like, enchanted it with dark magic, and that if Harry gets on it, it'll somehow kill him or hurt him in a way. That's Hermione's train of thought. And that's actually a really good theory. She is right that Sirius Black sent it, but he did not enchant it in any way. There's no dark magic on it at all. But that is some really, really good theorizing on Hermione's part. Something else about this section, like, of the book, Hermione in that Christmas morning. This is the last morning that the boys will talk to her for a while, because later in this chapter, McGonagall comes and confiscates the firebolt because Hermione tells her, like, Harry got sent this firebolt randomly, and I think Sirius Black sent it to him, and she's concerned, right? And McGonagall confiscates it for a while. And the boys are so livid with Hermione that she told McGonagall this, because he gets the firebolt taken away, the best broom. Like, they are very angry with her. And this is the last morning they talk to her for a while. Like, they start to kind of, like, ignore her and not hang out with her for a while. And it makes Hermione really sad. She's already stressed out because of her millions of classes and all the studying she has to do. Plus, she's still helping Hagrid with a defense for this case. Plus, she's worried about Harry, about Sirius Black coming after him. Like, she has a lot on her plate. She has a lot going on. So, she is very much, like, kind of going through some stuff this semester or this upcoming term. So I feel bad for her that this is when the boys start to, like, get really upset with her. And this is the last morning in a while that they interact with her. So Christmas spirit starts to dwindle a little bit because Ron and Hermione are very mad. Especially because, like, the whole Crookshanks Scabbers thing, like, Hermione puts Crookshanks into her room. She shuts her in the dorm because she's furious that Ron tried to kick her. And Ron is furious that, or sorry, kick him. Ron tried to kick him, Crookshanks is a boy. And Ron is furious that Crookshanks tried to kill Scabbers and eat him once again. Harry tries to make them talk to each other. Doesn't really work, so he gives up and he just devotes his time to just staring at the firebolt. He brought it down into the common room and he doesn't understand why, like, but for some reason, this annoys Hermione, too. Like, she's just annoyed at everything. She's annoyed that Harry brought the firebolt down and is looking at it. But she doesn't say anything. She just keeps looking, like, at the broom and, like, giving the firebolt, like, these, like, dark glances as if, like, it did something to her. And, again, it's because she thinks Sirius Black sent it and she's kind of eyeing it, like, wondering if it's going to do some dark magic or something, because she's concerned about that. So at lunchtime, they head down to the Great Hall, and it's decorated, of course, like it has been for Christmas. And there's just one table because it's set for 12 people because there's not many people there at all right now. The only people who are going to be there for the feast are Dumbledore, McGonagall, Snape, Sprout, Flitwick, Filch. Mrs. Norris is there, too, I guess, if you want to count her. And there's only three other students. There's two very nervous looking first years to be there. There's one fifth year Slytherin student who does not look happy to be there. And then it's the trio. So Dumbledore, who loves Christmas, is very happy. And he's like, Merry Christmas, come on down. There's just only a few of us, so it's just going to be one long table. Everyone sit down and enjoy. And then he pulls out the crackers, like Christmas crackers. That's more of like a British Christmas tradition in the Muggle and Wizarding World. We don't really have those in America. But they are like magical, of course, so they're cool. And he offers one to Professor Snape and he reluctantly tugs it because, you know, Snape is kind of a Grinch. And at the end of this one, when he pulls it, out comes a big stuffed, like, a pointed witch's hat, but it's stuffed with a vulture. And remember, this is a nod to the Boggart Snape, how he was wearing Neville's grandma's hat, like, after the ridiculous spell, which helps you get rid of a Boggart or helps you repel it. So word got around, and Snape, remember, he was being extra nasty to Neville for the last few weeks. He is still upset about that. And the fact that this is out of the hat now, or out of the Christmas cracker, and, like, it's this Boggart hat. Snape knows what it means. They all know what it means. They all think that it's so funny. Except for Snape. Snape does not. Dumbledore really likes the hat, and he takes off his own wizard hat and puts on that witch's hat with a vulture on it, because Dumbledore is just, he's just funny like that. So they begin the feast, start eating, and then the Great Hall doors open, and it's Professor Trelawney. She's, like, kind of gliding toward them. Has, like, a green sequin dress on. That's, like, her festive dress. And Dumbledore is surprised, like, oh, Sybil, pleasant surprise, come join us. And she says, oh, headmaster, I have been crystal gazing, like, you know, her misty, faraway voice that she does. And she says that, like, she was surprised, but she saw herself, like, in her crystal gazing, coming to join the rest of them for this, like, Christmas lunch. And so she's like, well, it's fate. I'm not going to argue with it. And so she's like, of course I'm going to be here. And so Dumbledore is like, okay, let me draw you up a chair. And he just casually conjures one out of midair. And it, like, floats down to the ground between Snape and McGonagall. And Trelawney's like, no, I can't sit down. Like, I dare not. If I join the table, we shall be 13. Nothing could be more unlucky. Never forget that when 13 dine together, first to rise will be the first to die. McGonagall, who is impatient, says, just sit down, Sybil. The turkey's getting cold. And so she hesitates, but she does eventually sit down. But she's visibly uncomfortable at this. Like, she doesn't want to be there. Like, she's all nervous and everything. And I'm going to explain why. Because let's count, right? We have Dumbledore at the table, McGonagall, Snape, Flitwick, Filch. We have Harry, Ron, Hermione, and then we have those two first years, and then the Slytherin student. So that's 12 people at the table. And so that's why she's saying, oh, if I sit down, then we'll be 13. And the first, when 13 dine together, the first to rise is the first to die. And so she is correct. But what she doesn't realize is that there's already 13 people there. Because who is in Ron's pocket? Scabbers. He's not actually a rat. He is a human. So he's the 13th person there dining. But they all don't know that, of course. And it's true. Like, Dumbledore is the first one to rise at this table in, like, at a certain point or whatever. And he is the first to die out of that whole group. So she is right in that sense. But not for the reason she thinks. Like, she thinks that her sitting there makes it 13. There's already 13 there, Trelawney. Like, you're the 14th one. Like, they're already doomed in that sense. So that's another cool little, like, Easter egg that happens later on, too. Dumbledore is the first one to die out of that whole group. And so she looks around and she says, where's Professor Lupin? And Dumbledore says, like, oh, I'm afraid, like, he's ill again. It's unfortunate that it would happen on Christmas Day. And McGonagall, being kind of snarky, she's like, oh, but of course you already knew that, didn't you, Sybil? Like, it's kind of a mean thing. It's kind of nasty to say, like, it's Christmas Day, just let her be. But that's how McGonagall is. She does not care for Professor Trelawney. She gives McGonagall a cold look and she's like, of course I knew, but I don't just parade around saying that the inner eye is all knowing and everything. And she also mentions that Professor Lupin won't be with them for very long and that he seems aware that his time is short. It is true. He's only going to be there for the year. And that's also because there's a curse on the Defense Against the Dark Arts teaching position that Voldemort put on it years ago. So that's why there's a new one every year. And again, like, there's still more comments by McGonagall kind of throughout this whole dinner and everything. And Dumbledore says, like, okay, I mean, I doubt that Professor Lupin is in any immediate danger. Like, Severus, you've made that potion for him again, which he already knows he has, but he's kind of, like, asking again, like, you've already made the potion. And Snape is like, yeah, I have, of course, you've kind of made me. And he's like, okay, well, and Dumbledore is the one saying, okay, well, he'll be fine then. Like, don't even worry about it. And then he kind of changes the subject. And he asks Derek, who was one of the first-year students there, he says, have you had any of these chipolatas? They're excellent. And I had no idea what those were, but they're sausages. I don't know. I guess maybe they're like a British thing. Chipolatas. I might be saying that wrong. But the first-year boy, Derek, he's nervous to be addressed by Dumbledore, and he just blushes and takes the platter of sausages. So this group continues to feast and enjoying their Christmas dinner. And about 2 hours later, they're all pretty full, and Harry and Ron decide to go back up to the common room, and they get up from the table, and Trelawney just freaks out, and she gives, like, a shriek, and she asks, which of you stood up first? And Ron and Harry aren't sure. They're like, we don't know. And McGonagall, again, cold, snarky demeanor, is like, I doubt that it'll make much of a difference unless a mad axe man decides to like burst through the doors right now and slaughter whoever they see in the entrance hall, like the first one to get up. And who knows? They all think Sirius Black is a dangerous madman. Like, who knows? But everyone kind of laughs, and Ron laughs too. He thinks it's funny. But Professor Trelawney, she looks offended by that. Like, she looks like that was a big offense to her. And Harry asks, like, Hermione, come on, are you coming? And Hermione's like, no, I just want a quick word with McGonagall. Like, no, you guys go ahead. And they don't think much of it. Like, even Ron says, like, she's probably just trying to see if she can take any more classes. Like, that's an exaggeration, Ron. But, I mean, that's, Hermione's an overachiever. So that's what Ron suspects. Like, they don't think anything of it at all. So they go back up to the common room. Fortunately, they don't see a Mad Axe man on their way up. And Harry goes to get the broom servicing kit that Hermione got him for his birthday. And so he brings it down, but there's really nothing to fix on the firebolt. So they just admire it some more. They just kind of stare at it more. And it's because there's no need to do anything to it. They don't have to clip any of the bent twigs. They don't need to polish the handle. It's just a flawless broom. It needs no work right now. So they just stare at it some more. And then Hermione comes in. And Professor McGonagall comes in with her. And so right away they're kind of like, okay, what is going on? And Hermione, she just rushes for a chair and she just grabs a random book and she holds it up, pretends to be reading it, but it's upside down. Like, it's just the first book she sees. She grabs it and pretends to read it, but the book is upside down. So clearly something is going on. She's not actually reading this book, right? She grabs it and it's upside down. Like, they know that something's up. And it's because she knows that they're about to be very angry with her. Her grabbing the first book she sees and pretending to read it is her, like, hiding her face. She knows that Harry and Ron are about to be so furious with her, despite the fact that she knows and she thinks in her mind that this is, like, the best thing she can do to keep her friend safe. She knows that they are about to be absolutely livid with her. So she grabs that book and she hides. And so McGonagall comes in and she's like, oh, Harry, may I? And she doesn't wait for an answer. She just looks at she just grabs the firebolt out of their hands and just holds it up and examines it very carefully, like every single centimeter she's looking at it. And she's asking questions like, okay, like no notes at all, like no card, no indication about who might have sent this, no message, like nothing at all. And Harry's like, no. And she's like, okay, well, I'm afraid I'm going to have to confiscate this. And Harry just jumps up right away. Harry and Ron both stand up. And she's like, what? Why? Like, why do you need to take this from me? And she says that she needs to confiscate it for any jinxes, any enchantments, like any dark magic. And she's like, I'm not an expert, but Madam Hooch and Professor Flitwick are. They're going to strip it down. She uses the words, strip it down. And Ron repeats, strip it down, like in horror. He can't imagine whatever that means for this broom, for this flawless international best broom in the world. Like, he's pretty concerned right now. And McGonagall says, well, it won't take any more than like a few weeks. We just need to make sure that it's jinx free and there's no danger. And Harry, his voice starts shaking. Remember, his Nimbus 2000 was destroyed. This is a new broom that he's gotten as a gift. The best broom in the world. He wants to win the Quidditch Cup. McGonagall wants to win as well. Harry's her seeker. Like, they want to win. His voice is shaking. He's, like, confused. He's like, why would you take this, though? Like, what? Like, why? What's the reason? There's nothing wrong with it. Like, Professor, it's okay. He's in extreme distress. And Ron is getting scared, too. And McGonagall says, well, you can't, there's no way for you to actually know that. It can't be known that it's jinx-free until you fly it. But I don't want you to fly it because it could be dangerous. Like, you can't fly it until we're absolutely certain that it has been tampered with. Like, I'll keep you informed. But until then, I'm going to have to take it away from you. And so, like, McGonagall takes the broom and walks out of the portrait hole. And Ron and Hermione just stare at her for a second. Like, they are livid. Harry can't even speak. He's just staring at her. Like, he's, like, shaking. He's so angry. So Ron decides to yell at her. He just rounds on Hermione, and he says, what did you go running to McGonagall for? And she throws the book aside, and her face is all pink. Like, she's very emotional right now. but, and she's like, she knows that they're gonna be angry with her, but she's very adamant and sticking to her guns and being like, no, like, I told McGonagall because of this. And she tells them that she told McGonagall because she thinks that the broom was probably sent to Harry by Sirius Black. And again, like those reasons I mentioned earlier in this episode, because she thinks that maybe he enchanted it with dark magic and is going to use it to hurt or kill Harry some way. And McGonagall completely agrees with her. And that is why the broom was confiscated. And Harry and Ron are both absolutely angry. And they know that she means well. They know that Hermione cares about him and she wants him to be safe. But they don't like what she did in this moment. And Hermione knows that. Hermione knew that she was going to be upset with them. It probably took some bravery to do this. But she had the whole day to kind of work up the courage and everything. But she did. She told McGonagall, hey, Harry got this firebolt. It's suspicious. It's an expensive, the best broom in the world. How would Sirius Black know that Harry's broom got destroyed? Like, how would he know that? And why would he send him this, the best broom, the most expensive broom in the world? Like, this is fishy. Like, something weird is going on here. And she was right. Like, it's completely reasonable to be so concerned about this. But it does not stop Harry and Ron from being absolutely livid with her. Like, they start to, oh gosh, they start to ignore her. They don't want to speak with her. They don't want to see her. They are very mad. And it kind of makes the rest of the team sort of feel some type of way too. They're like, why did Hermione have to tell McGonagall? Because now our seeker, who would have had the best broom in the world, who would have for sure won us all the rest of our matches, like, oh gosh, they're so mad. And it kind of makes sense, you know? But think about Hermione. Hermione, she is a know-it-all in a way, and she doesn't see herself as being a know-it-all. She more sees it as that, like, she has to get out what she's saying because she feels like she is right and other people need to know what she is being right about, not necessarily the fact that she is right, if that makes sense. Like, she just needs to say things sometimes and do things because she thinks that's the best option and she thinks she's right in that fact. It's not because she wants to be a know-it-all or because she wants to be like, oh, look at me, I'm so smart, I'm right and you're wrong. That's not the reasoning behind it. That's not the intent. Like, in this instance, she cares for Harry and she doesn't want him to get hurt. That's why she did what she did by telling McGonagall, hey, Harry got sent a firebolt. He doesn't know who it's from. Like, this is why I think it's bad. And McGonagall completely agrees. So, again, like, they know the intents, but they're mad at her and kind of for a good reason, but they also know she did it for a good reason. And that Christmas ends with emotions running high. And that is where the chapter ends, with Hermione saying, like, McGonagall agrees with me. I think that Sirius Black sent this. And that, such a good chapter again. Like, this is kind of a longer episode. I consider splitting it into two episodes for this chapter. But, I mean, I think that was adequate enough to do just the one episode. The rest of the book, most if not all chapters, will probably be at least two episodes, just because there is just so much to explain, so much like backstory and details and Easter eggs to connect. A few might only be one episode, it's possible, but there really is a lot to get into. So I'm so excited. This is so fun. And honestly, this is one of those instances where it's like Hermione did what she had to do. Not always the case with Hermione, but sometimes that is the case. And this is how she feels in her mind. Like, I did what I had to do to keep my friends safe. And even though Harry and Ron know that, it does not stop them from being just absolutely furious with her. So, yeah. Christmas ends on a bit of a sour note, you know. Harry started the chapter off, like, all upset and full of hatred because he learned this information about Sirius Black. And then he ends the chapter, like, or nears the end of the chapter, where he's like, I have this new broom, the best broom in the world. And then the chapter ends and he is broomless again. Like, he doesn't have that broom. It got confiscated. So, of course, he's going to be a little bit upset. And a lot of fun stuff in this chapter, like that connection with the first to rise from the table of 13. Trelawney was right with that. We also saw how McGonagall, again, we saw that like a few chapters ago when the class was like not caring about her transformation into a cat. She was like, why are you guys like all upset? And it's because they're like, we just had our first divination class, and Harry is like, apparently I'm supposed to die soon. And Trelawney's like, oh, whatever. Like, she says that every year to every student, and none of them have died. So that's like an example of how she doesn't care for Trelawney. And this Christmas dinner, her snarky remarks were another example of that as well. So, wow, another really cool, fun chapter to discuss. And I would love to know your guys' thoughts. Like, do you think Hermione did what she had to do? Was she in the right? Was she in the wrong? Can you see both sides, like Harry and Ron's point of view and then Hermione McGonagall's? Like, how do you guys feel about this? And you guys can email me at theairsofslytherinpodcast@gmail.com. Facebook page is The Airs of Slytherin Podcast. Twitter is @SlytherinPod. And this podcast is available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Breaker, Radio Public, Anchor, and Pocket Casts. And for next week's episode, make sure you read Chapter 12 of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, The Patronus. Thank you for listening to The Heiress of Slytherin, a Harry Potter podcast. I'm Mikaela, your host.